talk about government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this February the 10th on the West Coast, now February the 11th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zones. Lots to talk about. Fear-mongering is all over the place. It's off the charts. Everything from renegade or rogue nukes in India and elsewhere around the world. People are doing their due diligence, looking to track what the rogue elements of government are doing to subjugate us and to brainwash us into thinking that we are being attacked from outside, when in reality we have been attacked from within. And there is a legal term for that. I think they call it treason. And we're experiencing that on a multitude of levels, and we're just going to trust that as time goes by, the truth will out, and we will all come to see the madness and insanity that has encompassed the whole world. With that said, I would like to move toward what tonight's topic is going to be. I have a new guest on Evident Footprints tonight, someone who I had the opportunity to hear via a TV show that I appeared on in the Seattle area about a year and a half ago. At the time, the show was called Call for Investigation, and I think that that day I actually appeared on two shows. There were two different shows, and I haven't appeared on the show since then, but have some friends that keep me updated as to what's going on there. One particular friend actually sends me the broadcast on a DVD, and I'm able to listen to the research of Will Wilson and Patricia Shoup, Curtis Roy, and some others that have joined their investigative journalistic team that produces the show for Scan TV on Channel 77 in the Seattle area. And back in December, and I think first part of January this year, tonight's guest appeared there, and I was impressed with her knowledge, particularly with the nature of vaccines and this whole issue of pandemics, and I thought she has such a simple, clear, and easy to understand way of disseminating the information that everyone should hear. This information, if you're intimidated by listening to doctors and scientists talk about this stuff, certainly one of our own could give us a clear picture in an easy-to-understand fashion. And so for that reason, tonight's guest will join us shortly. But I want to refer first back to a document that's posted on my website. It's actually an article. And as I'm reassembling and reorganizing my website, it's located right now at directlightproductions.com under printable articles. And it's entitled IBM IoT, which, by the way, stands for Internet of Things, Predict 2009 Flu Pandemic in 2006. And I wrote, and this is a short article, so bear with me, Services and Global Procurement Pan-IoT Europe Pandemic Plan Overview, an official interdepartmental document, was distributed to upper-level management of IBM France in 2006. Disclosed in this secret document was the prediction of a planned pandemic described as having a, quote, 100% chance of occurring within the next 5 years, unquote. The document also describes quarantines and operational procedures to be taken upon the official announcements of the pandemic by the World Health Organization. The foreknowledge of such an event could not exist unless the pandemic was a planned event. Certainly, this document is the smoking gun, and maybe we could say smoking syringe, which demonstrates the current bird swine flu pandemic is an orchestrated event. As evidenced by this secret document, IBM's primary concerns are focused on maintaining their workforce, even under an official quarantine, and the continuation of sales and services to their clients. The single document definitively proves there is an international corporate collusion behind the bird swine flu pandemic and the intentional plan to create disease on a worldwide scale. Now, that certainly has lessened in terms of the amount of exposure that topic is getting these days, although as recently as this evening, a personal friend asked me, based on some inside information he was getting from someone in the military, if I knew anything about the demand or the requirements of Navy personnel to all receive swine flu inoculations. And I responded that this information's been out there for quite some time. I don't think it's anything that's been reserved for one particular branch of the military over another, but that it should arrive in the manner it did and through the means it did certainly should be a cause for some concern, we'll say. Alarm, I don't know. This topic's been out there for quite some time. Dr. Atuat and I have been exposing the backroom relationships between certain individuals, such as Dr. Henry Nyman and his Ligand Technologies, that are being licensed to many of the swine flu patent holders and vaccine manufacturers, such as Novartis. I also wrote an article about Orly Tate's husband and how through the Daylight Chemical Software Corporation and the Oracle 8 software is in collusion with Novartis and has been since the year 2000. This is someone suing the long-legged Mac Daddy in Washington, D.C. for his certificate of live birth. And so there's definitely, pardon me, a conflict of interest in that. And it raises red flags all over the place. But we, the people, have a concern about any organization's or corporation's intention to force us on a mass scale to take vaccinations against our will, particularly when they're unwilling to disclose the contents or to disclose what the side effects, or should I say the effects of taking such a vaccine, untested, but known to be flawed, known to be dangerous, in fact, would have upon those receiving it. Tonight's guest is a vaccine researcher, and I've seen several presentations that she's given. She doesn't have the convenience of flowcharts on the radio, so I trust that because of the simplicity and the brilliant way that she can communicate this information, that she'll be able to draw pictures for you in words that you can see this for yourself and understand very clearly the important information she's about to bring to you. I welcome to Evident Footprints for the first time, but not the last time, Allison Jones. Allison, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure, and I'm sure many people are going to find great solace in the information that you're going to share.
Yes, what my goal has been is to educate regular people and parents about how vaccines are made, exactly how they're made, and how they work. And then just by having that information is enough to point one in the right direction as to what's going on and what's wrong with them and why they're so dangerous. It becomes really evident, and they can kind of speak for themselves from there. You know, most of the professionals just throw around statistics here and there and use, you know, hype up these campaigns of fear about these diseases when really, that's another aspect of it. They're not that terrifying at all, and people need to learn about them, learn about the designer diseases, as they call vaccines, and really, you know, understand the history of it, which I would love to go and kind of brief over for people, so they can kind of get a concept of what's going on. Because there's three kinds of vaccines. There's a dead bacteria, a dead virus, and a living virus. And all three are made completely different. And they've got different dangers in them. And they can destroy brain cells, especially budding brain cells in babies, in different ways. And the first one that they start with is the dead bacteria. And because it's dead, the immune system ignores it. So what they do is they put poison in it to force a reaction from the immune system. And the poison that they use is the toxin from diphtheria, which is one of the top three toxins in the world. It goes botulism, then tetanus, then diphtheria. So they're using one of the greatest toxins known to man. And the way to get away with using that in the vaccine to incite an immune response is by adding an antitoxin to it. So that's like getting a snake bite and the antidote at the same time. But the mistake they made in the manufacturing of this is they don't bother to measure how much antitoxin they need to add. Like when they grow the poison for the vaccine, they're growing batches of diphtheria bacteria. And each batch will have a different amount, will produce a different amount of toxin. And the range is huge. And they judge it by MLD. It's called minimal lethal dosage level. So one batch will have 100 minimal lethal dosage. And then another batch will have 900 minimal lethal doses. And it's a huge range. But they only put an average amount of antitoxin into each of these. So that means some batches have more than they need, and then some don't have enough. I started this research over 25 years ago when I brought my son in for his first shot when he was 4 years old. I had waited till he was four. And he became paralyzed by the DPT. He was temporarily paralyzed for 3 days. He was stiff as a board, and he could only breathe and swallow. And I was determined to find out what happened. The clinic said, yes, it's a vaccine. We don't know what happened. He shouldn't have any more. And I decided to find out exactly what caused it, not to give him any more until I understood. And now I do understand. His batch didn't have enough of the tetanus antitoxin added to it, because if there's tetanus toxin and it needs the antitoxin also. So right there in the dead bacterial vaccines, we are playing kind of a Russian roulette. You don't know if you're going to get a bad batch or not. And that's what's causing a lot of the SIDS problems that we have. And it's also leaving the kids autistic. If it doesn't kill them outright through SIDS, for instance, if my son had been a baby, his heart would have stopped also. It wouldn't have just been he was only able to swallow and breathe. It would have been more than that. It would have been also have, you know, paralyzed his heart. And what's happening to a lot of parents who are standing over the crib and trying to keep their child breathing, what they're actually doing is waiting for the poison to wear off. And just like when you're poisoned or you get bit by a snake and they're trying to keep you conscious, because if you lose consciousness, you might not come out of it. It's the exact same thing that's happening to these children when they're lying in the crib and they're having trouble breathing. They've been poisoned. And it takes about 2 months for the body to get rid of it. And by the time it does, they then give them another booster. And the whole point, you see, under 2 years old, kids' immune systems are too immature to remember the target germ. And it doesn't remember the battle they have set up in these artificial scenarios with these imitation diseases. And so there's no reason to be giving them under this age. You know, they're just way too young
to be doing that. Allison, I'm going to put the brakes on here for a moment, if I may, and slow down just a little bit. You're giving a lot of information, and that's why you're here. I want to ask a question and reference something that you said. And you know, we have the time to talk about a lot of stuff here, and I'm sure we're going to cover it. For the sake of the audience, I want to go back. You mentioned tetanus, okay? Now, normally, one gets a tetanus shot as a preventative measure against getting lockjaw, for instance, if you step on a rusty nail. I don't know if it's a virus or a bacteria actually that causes lockjaw, but in that case, the type of serum that they use to produce the vaccine could be very deadly. And I use my late father as an example. He was inoculated for tetanus before he actually went to military service in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And they used a horse serum type of vaccine at that time. And he had an adverse reaction that almost killed him.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, some 20 or 30 years later, a doctor was going to give him the exact same vaccination. And were it not for him asking the doctor if that was a horse serum-based vaccine, he would have received it, and it would have killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these types of things go on day in and day out, and the real causes of and I'm just using tetanus as an example. You know, I would like you to explain the multiplicity of the vaccines that they're giving children, you know, newborns or
yeah, the minute they're born, they give them the Hep B, which is a dead virus vaccine that they, that all the dead virus ones are made with mercury, and I'm not talking about thimerosal, which is a preservative. They actually use it to count the germ particles when they're making it. So all the dead viral ones have mercury in them and aluminum as the suspension material. If you combine mercury and aluminum, you'll get synergistic toxicity, which is when you give, which is enough to kill brain cells, basically, when you have
synergistic toxicity. Now, that would be then that would lead likely to, let's say, autism, for example?
Oh, definitely. And everybody, as you say, everybody reacts different to everything. Well, different layers of, you know, different brain cell, numbers of brain cells will get killed in different kids depending on different things. And you can go to the University of Calgary on YouTube, have a clip about how vaccines get damaged by mercury, and it shows really explicitly that even a low dose will cause a budding brain cell to completely shrivel. So because children have so many brain cells, they have many more than adults do, they have to lose quite a bit for us to be able to tell. But you can often tell because they get these dark rings around their eyes and they're kind of sunken in. And this is because the neocortex part of their brain has collapsed a little bit because they've actually lost brain cells in the limbic system. And that's what defines autism. It's losing the brain cells in the mammal part of our brain. And it can either be destroyed by mercury, it can be destroyed by living viruses, or the poisons that I talk about. So there's three ways, depending on the kind of vaccine you get, that brain cells can be destroyed, particularly in babies. And because their immune systems are so weak, as I was saying before, they're two, they actually make them a lot stronger. So in the old days, they only had a DPT, a whooping cough shot, just for babies from 6 weeks, I'm sorry, to 6 years. And they did not have one for adults. It was against the law to give it to adults because it would cause brain cell damage and adults would sue them. But now they have one for adults they came out with a few years ago, but if you look at the ingredients and how toxic they are, it's 10 times weaker than the one given to babies. And that's not even taking in the weight difference, which they don't consider mm-hmm. the weight difference,
so,
which is
so
important.
In light of the fact that they're coming up or coming down with autism then, that is something that's easily blamed on the parentage, on the DNA.
Originally, yeah, that's what they do. And a lot of parents call me up very relieved to find out it's not their genes, which it's not. I mean, if you look at unvaccinated populations, there is no autism. You can see it historically. You can see it around the world. You can even see it in the FLDS Mormon cult family, those 500 kids. They weren't autistic. They have nothing to do with the medical institution, and they're not. And, you know, when it first came out in the 40s, it was only the rich people that could afford to take their kids in for the whooping cough shot, which was really the first one. And because the first, you know, the living virus, the polio was a drink, and that's the safest way. So that was also an early one they came out with, which was necessary and was very successful because it was safer. But then they came out, you know, with the DPT and then the poisons in it, and immediately they blamed it on the mothers, and they called it refrigerator mother syndrome because they were so socially odd. And the reason they're socially odd is because they have lost brain cells in their limbic system, which is where all behaviors, all our genetic wiring for our behaviors are wired into that limbic system. That's where kids are supposed to look towards adults to figure out how to behave, which autistic kids don't. Classic autistic kids don't know how to do. And that's why they can just run into a street and get themselves killed very easily. They have no idea how they're supposed to behave, you know. They have a very mm-hmm. difficult time figuring that out. And
Yes. Now, according to a past guest I've had on the show, and this guest is a specialist in the area of reversing the effects of autism and toxic poisoning or attacks upon the nervous system from the various immunochaos that occurs from some of these Frankensteinian vaccinations. Dr. Rashid A. Buttar was on the show some months ago. He was credited with reviving Desiree Jennings, the Washington Redskins cheerleader who had gotten a flu shot and had a very violent and severe reaction. She was at the threshold of death when Dr. Buttar was able to treat her, and he treated her nonstop for 36 hours. Using a whole system of detoxification and replacing certain nutrients and electrolytes that were missing from her system. She literally was in a respiratory arrest at the time she arrived at his office, and 36 hours straight. And he described the process and also many successes that he's had in reversing autism. Now, I'm mentioning this because I want to propose that if it can be reversed, then it really shouldn't occur in the first place, should it?
Well, see, what we're talking about is developmental damage. I mean,
yes,
I can't really comment on the Desiree Jennings because I don't really know the case well enough, but she's an adult, and the problem is that children are injured when they're very young, and it's hard to even tell. There's a difference. They're injured by usually the whooping cough or the Hib or these bacterial ones that all have diphtheria poison in them in their first 6 months. And they can be, those are the cases that are going to be the most severely autistic because of their age of development in the mind. But then when you get a case with an MMR, which they wait a whole year before they give the living viruses, it used to be 18 months, which it should be because they need the immune system to fight off the virus. And when they're too young, they can't, so they have to wait. I mean, they actually know they're giving this vaccine because the kid is going to have to fight the viruses for the rest of their life. And when kids are, you know, when their immune system can't fight it and it goes like a wildfire and destroys a bunch of brain cells like it did with Jenny McCarthy's child, luckily those kids are over a year old already and they've got some of their foundation cells and there seems to be more readily that they can be healed. But I do question, once a lot of the foundation brain cells have been destroyed, they're not readily replaced in the limbic system. I mean, from what I can tell, they aren't at all, but you can't say that. There's always hope. But it's the higher part of our brain, the neocortex, which just stores information that is able to grow brain cells readily. But our foundation cells, which are the ones that are injured in these autistic kids that stay autistic the rest of their lives, that's why they're missing brain cells. And you can see because the blood flow isn't there. They have hypoperfusion, they call it. It means less blood flow into the area, and that's because there are less cells to receive it. There's nothing wrong with their blood vessels, just less cells. And you can see a collapse of the neocortex when the limbic system loses cells, and actually a gap of air between the top of the brain and the skull when you look at imaging. It's quite shocking that these kids can manage as well as they do, considering the losses they suffer. But kids have so many more brain cells than we do.
Yeah, the future parents or the expectant parents out there listening, and or those planning on having children who aren't
those are
even
the ones
parents
I would
yet,
love to reach. Mm-hmm.
Are wondering what they can do to prevent this from happening to their child. I'm sure.
What
can you offer in that respect?
Patience. I tell them to have a thick skin. Do not listen to the doctors who are trained by the medical schools to be drug pushers, basically. To not listen to them telling them they're being criminal to wait to vaccinate their kids. You know, the parents have a natural hesitancy. Their babies are so tiny. They're 10 pounds. They're these little things, and they're going to stick them with so many things as they can. I suggest parents just wait until the kids are about 2 years old. That's the critical period. 2 years old. Even the Japanese wait 2 years before they vaccinate their kids. And in Europe, they wait longer. In America, we're gung-ho. It's become big business. They give them as many as they possibly can. You know, when I was a kid, we had like three. Now there's 36 within the first year or so, and it's just unbelievably overkill. So I would just suggest that parents, if they wait, they don't need to catch up to all the vaccines they miss. Because they were all a waste of time under 2 years of age, because the immune system won't remember them. So that's why they give them boosters over and over and over again. So it just circulates the poison, and the immune system's fighting the poisons constantly. If you just wait till they're two, the living viruses will last for life, And the dead viruses and the dead bacteria wear off because they're dead, but they'll last a couple years at least. They'll be remembered for a few years. And this is, if parents seriously want to vaccinate their kids, they should be very smart about it and do it when they're 2 years old and they're actually old enough to benefit from it. Otherwise, before that, every cold they get, they're self-immunizing themselves, and they'll be just fine. You know, they're immunizing themselves for life, because every time you get the real, you know, disease, your body will remember it. And that's the same premise for the living viral vaccines. It's actually alive, only they've gone so far as to actually inject it in your body, which is very dangerous. It gives access, say, for measles virus into the spine. Like MS people, they've got either herpes or measles in their spine. And when they open up that, they can tell. That's what the viruses do. They like to get in the insulation surrounding the brain cells and the cells of the CNS in the spine, too. So they get inside, and that's where they multiply, and then they end up scarring over. The word multiple sclerosis means multiple scars, and the scars are caused by the viruses bursting out of the cells. And then the wires, you know, short circuit because they don't have their insulation.
Mm-hmm. Wow, well, that's a lot of information. Now, I'm not saying it's too much. I'm just trying to, you know, this way the listeners can follow sort of the progression of an infant, you know, through childhood, and through puberty, and then into adulthood. We're confronted with today what seems to be a never-ending assault on the pre-sale of drugs through advertising, through the mainstream media, and every aspect, whether it's television, radio, newspaper ads, magazines, and then the news contributes by creating these fear-laden stories about how these things are lurching upon us. They're about to be devastating to whole groups of humanity if we don't become responsible and get vaccinated to prevent the bird flu or the swine flu or whatever disease they want to invent. Many of these diseases, we know from our research, have been created in military laboratories, have they not?
Well, I'm not going to comment on the swine flu right at the moment because that is such a hot button issue. No, I agree. That was set out so they could then make money selling this very dangerous vaccine for the mm-hmm. swine flu. The nasal spray is the most dangerous one I've seen yet. You did not spray living viruses up the nose. It was shocking. That gives access into the brain. Because we have, you know, when you breathe in the nose, things go down into the throat, but there's a little tiny opening for smells to go up into the olfactory bulb, which is our first cognitive brain. So there's actually nerves coming through holes in the brain up there. And it's only if you spray something at high force, such as frozen viruses, that are then going to thaw out right at these openings and be able to swim right into the brain. So it is definitely designed for people whose immune systems get weak. They won't be able to fight off these viruses, and the viruses will cause dementia. They're going to spread like wildfire, just killing brain cells one by one if the immune system can't stop them.
Yes.
So that's a very scary thing. But I wanted to talk about something positive, too, that parents can do, which is kind of enlightening here. You mentioned tetanus. Tetanus actually does not live where there's air. It's anaerobic. It can only live underground where there's no air. Like in World War I, when the soldiers dug into the ground, they dug into fields of tetanus that had been layered under the ground. But if there's a nail on the surface of the ground and it's exposed to the air, there cannot be tetanus on it. So tetanus is something that only farmers or people gardening who nick themselves while they're digging with, say, manure that they're adding to their soil. There's like half a dozen little old ladies who get tetanus naturally in this country. But other than that, we have such a different lifestyle, and we're not just digging around, pulling up barbed wire out of the ground on farms anymore, and it's very rare for someone to get tetanus. And if you do, you know, when you get supposedly step on a nail, you might have tetanus, and they run you to the hospital, and they give you a tetanus shot.
Mm-hmm.
That tetanus emergency shot is not a vaccine. It's an antibody shot. They're called immunoglobulin shots. That antibody shot immediately goes to work and stops tetanus if it's present. And we know this works 100%. No one ever gives it to you and says, oh, I hope it works. Now, they don't tell you they have those same shots for measles. They have them from whooping cough. They have them for these diseases that are not pleasant. They're not particularly terrifying. And we're not talking about polio here or smallpox. These are kind of, you know, measles is kind of like, used to be like chicken pox in the old days. They're not that scary. But if one does get them, they can take the antibody shots and it will help them fight it immediately. And so there is no hurry or panic about, you know, these diseases, supposed diseases. They give out shots for Hib. Hib lives in your throat and helps your immune system. It's supposed to be there. I have no idea. The only reason to give that would be to disable an immune system. They give all kinds of ridiculous shots now. And for the ones that are scary, such as I mentioned, you know, whooping cough and measles, yes, there are solutions. But they won't tell you that because they want you to bring in your kid for as many shots as they can possibly give them.
Yeah,
you know,
Ingrid Castle from Vaccination Liberation mm-hmm. Organization mm-hmm, and the Idaho Observer has been on the show a number of times, and
excellent.
She's related to me as well as some other well-known doctors in this field, experts in the field, that the shots, the series of shots that the infants get is equated to a 180-pound man getting over a course of 30 days. I mean, it's just off the charts.
It's off the charts. And the reason is because their immune systems are so immature, they have to make them more toxic and more deadly to force an immune response. And that's why these shots for adults are 10 times as toxic, because adults have mature immune systems, and they only need a little prodding to come out and fight. But babies have such weak ones. They're relying on the mother's antibodies, which protect the babies for the whole time she's nursing and continue to protect them for a while. There's no reason to run off and start sticking your little 10, 20-pound baby with the very same things you want to avoid them exposure. It doesn't make sense. Oh, I don't want you to get measles, so here I'm going to inject the living virus into your body when you're only like 14
Yeah, the reason
old,
I asked that question, and you partially answered it, the issue of breastfeeding, the children that have been breastfed have developed a naturally functioning immune system, haven't they?
They have much stronger immune systems, and that's the whole point. You want your kid to grow up with a strong immune system, and parents whose first children have been damaged by vaccines have been hesitant to give them to their second child and not given to them many of them at all, and they can see a huge difference in the ways that the size of the child and the child's immune system of the unvaccinated child will be much stronger. They'll grow better. They'll be stronger. And if they still want to vaccinate, you know, if they've waited a couple years, then they have skipped, you know, the dangers of them becoming autistic, or, you know, they get allergies through vaccines also, and a whole host of, you know, autoimmune disorders that occur. And also tumors. Because, like, for instance, if someone has got tumors in the brain, often those are by the viruses that have found their way into the brain. Because what the body does is when there's a virus moving from cell to cell, which is what they do, the cells that have been attacked by the virus send out interferon messengers to a couple of layers of cells down, and a wall of cells will commit suicide so the virus cannot advance. And it's a fascinating phenomenon that we have cells in our body that will commit suicide to try to stop a virus from advancing. And that is the cause of then tumors often, because a wall of dead cells will build up, and they keep creating these walls to try to stop it, and then you get a mass of dead cells. Which can, you know, and then we often get little, you know, riddled with little benign tumors in the brain, but the virus is still playing cat and mouse in the immune system and moving around and causing damage.
Well, it's quite a horrific picture, isn't it?
Oh, it is, and the more you learn, the more horrifying it gets. I was originally studying them to figure out which were safe and which weren't, and I didn't find any to be safe. And the immunologist I study with, even when he, you know, when I find one I think it might be, oh, you know, the Hep B can't be that bad, he'll say, no, the body thinks it's real, the liver will get swollen. I mean, even when you think they're benign, they're still, you know, they're forcing reactions from the body that can be quite serious.
Is that the actual cause of the jaundice that you see in newborns, or is that a phenomenon as part of the birth experience?
Well, no. A lot of the jaundice would be caused by the Hep B vaccine, which they automatically give to everybody when they're born in a hospital, which has both aluminum and mercury in it. Aluminum targets the liver, and it will clog up the liver. And then the liver cannot, which the liver is the part of the body that cleans toxins out of the body. And normally it would be busy cleaning the mercury out of the brain. But if it's clogged up with aluminum, it can't. And that's where you get the brain cells will then just keep dying as the mercury moves around from cell to cell. Very dangerous situation for them to do that. And they're doing that, in the newborns. So right off the bat, they're losing brain cells.
Now, not to gloss over this, you will be on the show again, and if necessary, we'll revisit these topics in respect to infants. I would like to explore the phenomenon that's going on with the school system, and that's the forcing of parents to comply with mandated vaccines. If they've received these vaccines as infants, or now we're adding a whole new menu to the list, how do you advise parents that are concerned about these draconian laws that are, or these mandates that are being passed down to them, that their kids will not be allowed to go to school unless they receive these vaccines, and they're not really being disclosed as to what they are?
I have seen that a little bit in the news, and it's really one of the most terrifying things I've seen. I mean, they always have mandated these vaccines, and I ended up having 5 children. I did not vaccinate any of my other children, and I used a form that I have on my website, an exemption form, and I moved around a lot, and I went to a lot of different schools, and if there was a place that would not accept them, which didn't happen, but if it would have, I would not have let them go there. I would rather not risk the brain damage, the immune system problems, et cetera. It's not worth it for me. So all my kids are unvaccinated all the way up through college. I have them in, Ivy League universities right now, and, they're having no problem. And then you see at a lot of these Ivy League schools, you'll have kids from Israel, Japan, India, all mastering the most complicated sciences in their second language, no less. And they're just superseding the American students because we're dumbing down our education system because we have so many neurologically damaged kids on the spectrum in our schools now. And that's why we're so far down the scale and we can't compete with, kids that live on the streets in India. They're able to go to MIT, no problem. And ace everything in their second language,
mm-hmm.
and we can barely keep up. So, we have to do something about it. And I was going to say also, too, about the medical institution. Back in 1830, the 1800s, Dr. Oliver Wendell Holmes discovered washing hands. And do you know that the medical institution argued against washing hands for 70 years and did not adopt it till the turn of the century? And this is the kind of mentality we're up against here. We want to be educated. We want to know what's going on. They're keeping us all in the dark about everything. They don't want us to know about the side effects. They don't want us to know about the tragedies and the victims or anything like that. And they are refusing to look at the link between vaccines and autism, which is so evident. And here we are 70 years later from the onset of autism back in the 1940s, it started. And they're still claiming they have no clues. And they're ignoring the parents who have plenty of information to give them about their kids who were damaged right after the vaccine, just like my son was damaged by the tetanus shot, the DPT, actually, the tetanus component in it. And they ignored it at the clinic. They didn't write it down. They didn't record it. And then there was nothing they could do about it. And this is what we're up against. We're on our own trying to educate each other and we couldn't be doing a better thing than trying to save the brains of our progeny. It's just a horrible thing. We're affecting, we've got Asperger kids everywhere trying to fit in, and it's just cruel. It's a crime against humanity.
Yes.
Just blindly go along poisoning and killing. And
now, you mentioned your website and a form that you have there. In fact, I haven't read the form. I apologize for not having read it.
It's in the menu on the left side. It will say exemption form. I have a long menu on my website, trackingvaccinations.com.
Yes, trackingvaccinations.com is the website. You can put the www in front of that. That may help. The reason I brought that up, there have been several in the medical community who have suggested, and have actually published forms compelling the doctors and the nurses and those administering these mandatory vaccinations that they agree to hold to be held responsible for what they're claiming the vaccine does. That certainly sounds like sound advice to me. What are your thoughts on that? And is your form anything like that? Or
no, the form basically says that if you make me vaccinate my child and something happens to him, I will sue the wazoo out of you. And it makes you kind of a wild card, and they just don't deal with you. They're like, okay, she's obviously a lioness. She's a wild card, you know, because most people don't. Most people are like sheep, and they just go along with what the doctors say. But it's not their fault. They're trusting the doctors. They're believing what they're saying. And the doctors are making them feel like they're criminal if they don't do everything they tell them to do. Mm-hmm. But the doctors don't think outside the box. They're just following protocols so they don't get sued, which is how they're taught in medical school, which is funded by the pharmacies. So you can see how they're in a little closed loop there. You know, the question isn't if vaccines cause autism, it's how now. That's what, you know, we have to get to here.
Yes. Well, it's a valid topic, particularly because not all doctors are in agreement with that policy. Many do have a conscience and are really interested in healing.
Mm-hmm.
See, we as a society, we've been led to believe that doctors heal, and yet being run by the pharmaceutical companies and the control that they have over the FDA, because they fund so much of the FDA's policies and actions and actually supply them with personnel, it's a double-edged sword, so to speak, but it's aimed at us. We take the brunt of the decisions that they make, the medications that they release out to the public, and then, you know, a year or two later, after many thousands of deaths, then someone brings forth a lawsuit on a television commercial, and you may become part of a class action suit, or you may not. There's always these stipulations that you have to have suffered during a particular time period. You have to prove that you have been damaged, which seems logical, yet we know up front, before these things are actually administered to the public, that they haven't been tested. Many times the test results themselves are totally fraudulent.
Ironically enough, the test is being done on the public in the case of these children and their reactions to all these vaccines. They are the guinea pigs. They are the test subjects, and they're ignoring their data. It's been coming in for 70 years, and they're paying no attention, which is why they can claim they have no clues as to what's causing mysterious autism in SIDS. And in the beginning, they called them autistic children because there were no adults. When it first started, they were only kids, and they had, you know, now we still kind of use that phrase. But one of the ways we can prove what's going on is by using, and this was brought, I heard this by watching Jenny McCarthy and Larry King Live last year. She brought two doctors with her. And this time they had brought up the fact that when they were trying to sue the tobacco companies for causing cancer, the tobacco companies kept saying, well, prove, you know, the cigarettes are causing lung cancer in people. You can't prove it. And they were able to get to them by saying, but look, groups of people who don't smoke cigarettes don't have cancer. And by that same token, they can apply the same thing to vaccines. You know, they're saying, oh, well, prove that vaccines cause autism, this mysterious thing that has just appeared and increases as we increase our vaccines. Prove it. And it's saying, well, okay, if you look at groups of kids that are unvaccinated, hey, guess what? There's no SIDS. There's no allergies, and there's no autism. Nobody's on the spectrum. And these are the kids that are not vaccinated. You can see it in the history of Japan. They had no autism until we sent our vaccines in the 1950s, and they figured it out within a couple of years what went wrong. And that's why they stopped vaccinating their kids under two. And then you can see over in China, 1999, they finally opened the doors, accepted our gift of the DPT and whatever other vaccines we sent over, and all of a sudden, they went from no autism to millions of cases of autism. And so we can see it within 10 years ago in China, going from zero to millions, and it's like overnight. It's very evident that the problems are stemming from the vaccines, and what we have to do now is to get down to it. And all that takes is looking up. I have some homework for people. These are the words I want them to look up, and I'm serious. Because if people really want to know how these are made and how they work, they should look up some certain words, and that will tell everything, you know.
Okay, well, let's encourage them to get pads and pens or pencils and get ready to write then.
Okay, yeah, I'll give them a few words. And if they look these up, then it will validate what I'm saying about these dangers. For instance, for the dead bacterial vaccines, which are like the HIV and the whooping cough one, it's called Ehrlich's phenomenon. That's Ehrlich phenomenon. And that's how they determine how much antitoxin to add to the toxin, which is a terrifying read because it goes into minimal lethal dosage levels. And it's so shocking, you can't believe they're giving this garbage to children at the end of it. And then I'll leave that one at that. And then the next one for the dead viral vaccines, the word is synergistic toxicity. That's a good one to learn. And that's spelled S-Y-N-E-R-G-I-S-T-I-C, synergistic toxicity. And for the living viral vaccines, which is our third and final kind of vaccine, I like to talk about the blood-brain barrier and super strains. Because actually what they've done, for instance, like with measles, mumps, and rubella, this is not, what they have in the vaccines is not the naturally occurring virus. They have been breeding it in laboratories for decades to be super strains that can infect more cells in their petri dishes than the natural occurring cousins. And that's what we're giving these kids. These are the really powerful. These are not natural, and they are designed to actually infect the cells and stay and play cat and mouse with your brain for the rest of your life. And that's the cause we have of a lot of the dementia. Same thing if they give them a living, well, most of the flu shots are dead. But flu is a virus, too, that can get in the brain, you know, from the spray. There's going to be a lot of people who have problems with that, too. So anyways, so those were my three, three words, three little phrases that if people start looking up, they'll be shocked to see what's going on as far as those three different kinds of vaccines go.
Now, on your website, right on your homepage, you have... You reference that vaccines cause allergies, and I always suspected that. Mm-hmm. I also would submit that food additives cause allergies as well. Mm. And there may be some genetic causes somewhere down the road, but very likely induced by one of these other topics that we're discussing.
It is. It is. It's pretty cut and straightforward because they actually use the laws of allergies to make their vaccine for the dead bacteria work. Because when you have the dead bacteria ones, like the one for whooping cough and HIV, because it's dead and they put the poison in, what happens is the immune system comes out and attacks the poison. That's what it's fighting. And it's in such a heightened state of fighting. It's in a death throw. It's in a death match because they put the minimal lethal dosage level in it. So what happens is it attacks every foreign protein around, all the foreign proteins. They don't know who the enemy is. They know the poison is, but there's all these foreign proteins also, and they're in a hyper state of attack. So they do. They attack the target germ, which happens to be the whooping cough, which is so benign and so non-toxic. That the body ignores it unless you put the poison in. And then, by the same token, it's attacking, as I said, every foreign protein, which just happens to include the target germ. But it will also attack, as you notice, everything that somebody has an allergy to is for a protein. Dander is bugs on cat fur, you know, pollen are the seeds in the air. The dairy is casein, peanut butter is a nut protein. If you look at all the things that kids have allergies for, they are proteins. And it's because while they're in that hyper state of attack mode, they either ate a peanut butter sandwich, they breathed in the pollen in the air as they drove home in the car. You know, the hyper state can last for hours afterwards and often longer. And that's when allergies are created. And they'll be remembered. Just like they'll be remembered for that germ for quite a while. And that's why allergies can fade away, just as, you know, it fades away for the germs. But not always. Sometimes kids are stuck with them for life.
Mm-hmm. Now, I notice, you know, throughout life, you encounter people and their children and their families who have developed at an early stage in their life a very serious allergy that requires them to use an inhaler.
Mm-hmm.
And that certain types of stress, and I would presume that that's related to the nervous system, that damage to the nervous system likely actually induces some allergic reaction that causes their bronchial tubes to
swell up.
To swell up and tighten up that
they
can't take in air.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, what are these inhalers doing other than temporarily relieving the...
That's all they're doing.
There's nothing you can do.
Yeah, it's like some kind of steroid, no doubt, to reduce the inflammation just so they can breathe. Because the strongest immune system in the body is actually in the throat. Germs naturally enter in through our nose and our mouth, and just a few at a time, which is why the oral polio vaccine was so successful, because we drank it, and it really worked on that localized immune system where the germ would be entering in. So so what has happened is while they were vaccinated, they breathed in, you know, pollen easily or something like that through their nose, and it got into their throat, and that's where their immune system learned to attack it. So anytime they do come in, say, against a cat maybe they're allergic to or something, in the dander and the bugs in the cat's fur, yeah, they'll swell up because their immune system is fighting it, because that's what we taught them to do. We gave them that vaccine. We're manipulating their immune systems, and we're manipulating more than we bargained for. And then we're not paying attention to what we're doing. You know, we're actually experimenting in human beings. You can't test these. I mean, they test them on rats before they actually go out and give them to people. So we are the guinea pigs.
I've yet to see a rat carrying an inhaler, too. Well, maybe I should back up. I probably have seen a few in certain cities, especially on the East Coast. In our closing moments, boy, this hour is really flying. What would you like to see happen? You're obviously educating our listeners and many other people. I wish I could post the presentation, and I'm going to try to work this out with Will Wilson or maybe Dan Grom, is it? Don Grom,
mm-hmm.
The producer of the show that you appeared on, to see if I can post your talk. Really, I mean, you're revealing a lot of information, and it's something that they can see. You had a whiteboard, and you're drawing diagrams and actually showing people what's going on in a visual way that makes it really easy for people to understand what's happening. What do you foresee, or what do you hope will happen in terms of a collective movement to get this problem addressed? Obviously, you know, it's like David and Goliath here.
It is, but I think the linchpin is leaning on people being educated. People actually they have a gut feeling that there's something wrong with them, but they don't have the words for it. They don't have the science backing them up. They don't know what
Yes.
to say. So everything I say can be cross-referenced, and it's like doing a great crossword puzzle, and you just, you know, everything just fits in perfectly. And once they're educated, yes, then they can go out and get mad. They can say, what? You're putting poison in the vaccines and then forcing me to give them to my kids? They can say, what? You want to put super strains of viruses in my kids' brains? You know, if you inject them 10, 20%, who knows how many percent? That's where we need people coming in and finding what percentage of living measles virus do make it into the CNS, the central nervous system. You know, this is what we need to find out. I'm just introducing this whole thing and opening up the whole Pandora's box of what's really going on here. And if people... and parents are very smart. They figure this stuff out. They don't like what they're hearing. And they're saying, yes, they should start by refusing to have their kids vaccinated till they're 2 years old. They should, you know, say, prove to me this is safe. You know, and so if they get mad enough, and we just, you know, that's the way to make change. And we have to fight really hard you know, protect our kids, because it's working against us. It seems to be getting more and more difficult to, you know, get the doctors on board doing the right thing. Though there are some naturopaths that are agreeing they should wait 2 years before vaccinating and whatnot and offering alternatives. So there are quite a few alternative doctors out there that are on board, thank God, and it is growing. And thanks to Jenny McCarthy, it's not even taboo to talk about anymore. We're able to open up the whole subject now, and that's what's key. We're not going to be kept in the dark any longer about this. That's enough.
Well, we're about out of time. It's been fascinating, and you are going to be on the show again on the 23rd of February. Hopefully this was a pleasant experience for you. First time.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful. I'm so glad I got a chance to say some things. There's so much to say. And like the one thing I didn't get to, like, for instance, is the physiology of the children. Their insulation on the nerves doesn't finish growing for 2 years. So that's another reason to wait, because their nervous system and all the brain cells in their body are vulnerable because the insulation that protects them is not complete for 24 months. Very important to remember that. That's what the terrible twos is. That's why we don't walk for a whole year and we don't run for two. We're born gestationally premature. Our brains are too big to fit through the old monkey bones. So we come out very, very vulnerable compared to the animal world, where antelopes can run within minutes of being born. It's because their insulation is complete. We have to be born so early, it's not complete. And it's not complete for a whole year to even have enough current to walk. It's not that there's something wrong with the kids' muscles that they don't walk for a year. It's because there's not enough insulation for electrical current. It's very fascinating. And then the terrible twos is achieved because they suddenly have full current, because they have full insulation. When you have completed insulation, you have full electrical current, and they feel their full power for the first time. And that's when you know it's safe to vaccinate, because they finally have all their insulation. So you can just see it by looking at them, by knowing this. You know, that's what the parents need to be educated about. You know, what the vaccines are about, what the diseases are about, and what the developing child is about.
Yes.
So we can see whether these should all be matched up.
Before we say goodnight, we have a request for you to repeat the three words that we asked everyone to write.
Oh, excellent.
So you have a chance to teach again.
Oh, I love it, because this is great. Okay, for the dead bacterial vaccines, which is like whooping cough and Hib and stuff, the word is Ehrlich's phenomenon. Ehrlich, apostrophe S, and then the word phenomenon, you know, phenomenon. And that describes how they calculate how much antitoxin to add. And then number two, for the dead viral vaccines, the word is synergistic toxicity. And synergistic is synergistic, and then the second word is toxicity, and that's toxicity. And then number three, for the living viral vaccines, you can look up two things here, actually three, the blood-brain barrier, then there's super strains of, say, the measles and mumps and rubella, for instance. And then there's the story of interferon and cell suicide is quite fascinating also. So there you go. That's a start. And because viruses are the only thing that can cross the blood-brain barrier, why it's making it very dangerous as to how you administer them into people.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, you know, there are ways to make them safer, and they're definitely not doing it by adding aluminum, mercury, toxins, and super strength.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for repeating that, and I look forward to your interview on the 23rd of February. That's Tuesday night, the 23rd, for those west of the central time zone, or it'll be the morning, the early morning of the 24th for those on the East Coast and in the central time zone. And it's just a tremendous amount of information. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. And I have a feeling if you'll come back numerous times, we'll get into many of these topics again. Because
Excellent.
There's just so much information to cover. I want to give the listeners and the new listeners that join us all the time the opportunity to hear what you have to share. I want to thank you so much. The website is www.trackingvaccinations.com. And our guest, Allison Jones.
And I was going to say, in the meantime, people can go to my website, and I sell a booklet, a 44-page booklet with diagrams and images for only $3.95, free shipping. So if they go to my website, they'll get a very informative little booklet if they like, and it has a lot of pictures, and it will help guide them through what I introduced tonight.
And I will be posting that on my books page, as agreed, once I have a chance to review it. I'll put a review up there and your contact information.
Excellent. So, I'll be getting that to you soon, then.
All right. You have a wonderful evening, Allison. I look forward to your next appearance, and stay away from those needles.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Don.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
I'll say goodnight. Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our special guest, Allison Jones. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network and BlogTalkRadio.com for broadcasting Evident Footprints. Also, I'd like to thank Don Newsom for the sound and Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible on BBSRadio.com. Special thanks to the listeners for tuning in. Join me again tomorrow when my special guest will be none other than former U.S. Marine Drew Malone Raines III. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.
This is Marco May, and you're listening to the number one internet radio network on the planet, bbsradio.com.
Hello, this is Tom with hempusa.org. Most of you have been hearing my ads for the past few months, and it's no secret that the economy is failing and prices are rising in all sectors. If you've been thinking of a nutrient-dense daily food source and a storable food for yourself and family, the time to act is now. At hempusa.org, we still believe that food will be your greatest asset in these trying times ahead. Please call 1-908-691-2608 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Beware, be smart, and be ready. Call 908-691-2608 or visit us at hempusa.org. Families need this high-quality natural food source for its low price and long storage shelf life. This incredible food source should be a staple part of your diet every day. Call 908-691-2608 or visit us at hempusa.org today.